Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. And thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Today, we are going on a really fascinating deep dive. I want you to start by picturing your body's cellular powerhouses, you know, the mitochondria.
Right, but we need to move past that standard high school textbook image of a, you know, static little bean shape.
Exactly, yeah. Instead, I want you to picture this massive, incredibly intricate 45-piece engine that is just constantly running.
And it's generating the energy for literally everything you do. Every heartbeat, every muscle twitch, every single thought.
Yeah, the sheer scale of it is wild. But now imagine what happens when just one microscopic, totally peripheral gear in that engine goes missing.
Just one tiny piece out of 45.
Right. Does the whole machine violently seize up? Does it, I don't know, just sputter along inefficiently?
Well, or does it cause a completely unpredictable chain reaction? Because that's the thing, it really depends on which part of the body you're looking at.
Exactly. When a single component of a fundamental machine like that is compromised, the fallout is incredibly difficult to predict.
Oh, it's a total nightmare for doctors to diagnose. Because, you know, the human body is a master of compensation. It'll hide the problem right up until the exact moment it just can't anymore.
Which is exactly the real-world problem we are unpacking today. We're looking at how a microscopic, supposedly silent genetic typo caused a devastating biological collapse across multiple families.
And how modern science had to completely rewrite the diagnostic rulebook to figure out why.
Today we celebrate the work of Natalie B. Tan, Holger Prokisch, David A. Stroud, and a massive global consortium of researchers.
Yeah, their work really pushed the boundaries of what we understand about genetic diagnostics.
They published a groundbreaking paper in 2026 in the American Journal of Human Genetics. And this deep dive is going to explore the global medical detective story they uncovered.
It's truly a masterclass in modern diagnostics.
So getting into the background here, the specific engine we are talking about today is called mitochondrial complex one.
Right, complex one.
Now, I know mitochondria are the powerhouses of the cell, but what exactly is complex one doing on the factory floor?
So you can kind of think of complex one as the main turbine in a microscopic power plant.
Okay, a turbine.
Yeah, it is the largest enzyme of what we call the respiratory chain, and it sits right there embedded inside the inner membrane of the mitochondria.
And its primary job involves this molecule called NADH, right?
Exactly, NADH.
Let's break that down for a second for the listener.
Right.
If I'm trying to visualize the mechanics of this engine, what is the best way to think about NADH?
Picture NADH as like a tiny, fully charged cellular battery.
Oh, I like that. A little battery.
Yeah, so complex one takes that battery and it extracts the electrical charge, the electrons, and it uses that raw energy to physically pump protons across a wall.
Wow, literally pumping them across the membrane.
Actively moving them from one side to the other, and that builds up immense pressure.
Which is very much like pumping water up into a reservoir behind a massive dam.
That is the perfect analogy, yes. That built-up pressure is what we call an electrochemical gradient.
Great.
And eventually, the cell lets that pressure release. And the rushing flow of those protons is what spins another piece of machinery to create ATP.
And ATP is the universal energy currency that powers life.
Exactly. Without ATP, everything stops.
So if this 45-piece turbine breaks down, the dam stops working, the pressure drops, and the cell literally runs out of energy and dies.
Which is catastrophic at the cellular level. And that cascades into organ failure.
And historically, doctors have been incredibly frustrated by this specific system, haven't they?
Oh, completely. Because a patient would present with severe symptoms, right? Mm. And a clinician could take a muscle biopsy, measure the chemical activity, and definitively state, yes, complex one is failing.
But they couldn't tell the patient why.
Exactly, because complex one is built from 45 different subunits. Some are encoded by mitochondrial DNA, but the vast majority are encoded by our regular nuclear DNA.
So identifying which specific nuclear gene out of thousands was mutated used to be basically a guessing game.
Yeah, because the symptoms don't always match the genetic blueprints. You see this referred to in the literature as a notoriously poor genotype-phenotype correlation.
Right, meaning the same exact broken machine can cause wildly different diseases in different people.
Precisely. You can have two patients with a mutation in the same cellular complex, and their clinical presentations will look absolutely nothing alike.
Which perfectly sets up the mystery at the heart of this paper. To really understand how this broken engine works, we have to meet the patients who brought it to the medical world's attention.
And finding these patients was a feat in itself. The researchers utilized a digital platform called GeneMatcher.
which assembled a highly unique cohort of 4 individuals from 3 completely unrelated families across the globe.
Yeah, GeneMatcher has completely revolutionized rare disease research.
How so? Like, how did it work before?
Well, before it existed, a geneticist might find a strange, novel mutation in a specific gene in just one isolated patient.
But a sample size of 1 isn't enough to prove anything scientifically.
Exactly. You need more data. So GeneMatcher acts as this secure, specialized matchmaking service for scientists.
Ah, I see.
A doctor in Switzerland uploads a flagged gene, and the system alerts them that, hey, doctors in Australia, Germany, and Turkey are looking at mutations in that exact same gene.
Breaking down all those global silos.
Exactly. It connects the dots.
But here is where the clinical mystery gets incredibly weird.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the data for family 1. They are of Korean descent, 2 affected siblings.
Right.
And their primary medical issues were severe congenital heart disease. Specifically, coarctation of the aorta, which is a dangerous narrowing of the large blood vessel branching off the heart.
It's very severe.
Plus, they had really rare blood issues. The paper mentions pancytopenia and macrocytosis, meaning they required multiple blood transfusions right after birth.
Yeah, they were very sick newborns.
Is that a normal presentation for a mitochondrial endogen failure?
Yeah, not at all. Severe heart malformations and profound hematological abnormalities, like the body just failing to produce enough blood cells, those are highly unusual primary manifestations.
Because usually you'd expect other things to fail first.
Right. The heart and the bone marrow require massive amounts of energy, so they can certainly be affected. But this is far outside the classic hallmark symptoms of a mitochondrial disorder.
So a doctor looking at a newborn needing blood transfusions and heart surgery isn't immediately going to suspect a tiny gear in a cellular turbine is missing.
No, it wouldn't be on the top of their list.
Especially because when you look at family 2 from Switzerland and family 3 of Turkish descent, their presentations look entirely different from family 1.
Completely different.
No heart defects or blood transfusions are mentioned for them at all. Instead, these patients suffered from a severe progressive neurological decline.
Right, neurological, not hematological.
They had nystagmus, which are involuntary eye movements, and bilateral optic atrophy causing serious vision loss.
And the MRI results for these families were just devastating. They showed severe Leigh syndrome-like brain lesions.
Brain lesions.
Yeah, specifically bright spots of damage in the substantia nigra and the brainstem. These patients suffered a progressive loss of motor skills.
It's so tragic.
It is. The patient in family 2 tragically passed away at just 13 years old after a prolonged regression of motor function and severe myopathy.
It was a complete neurological and physiological collapse.
Exactly.
So I have to ask the obvious question here. If all these patients have a failure in the exact same cellular engine complex 1, why does one family have severe heart and blood developmental issues right at birth, while the others suffer from this catastrophic brain and motor decline?
It's a great question. And it comes down to a fascinating interplay between tissue-specific energy demands and the precise nature of the genetic damage each family carried.
Okay, break that down for me.
So different tissues rely on this energy pathway to wildly different degrees at different stages of human development.
That makes sense.
The heart and the developing blood system in the bone marrow, they have massive acute energy requirements during early embryogenesis and infancy.
They need a huge surge of power right at the beginning to build themselves.
Exactly. But the brain.
Yeah, what about the brain?
The brain is a massive, continuous consumer of ATP throughout your entire life. It never stops demanding high energy.
Okay, so how do the mutations factor into that?
Depending on the specific genetic error, the engine might not be completely broken. It might limp along at, say, 20% capacity or maybe just 5% capacity.
Oh, I see.
That residual function determines which tissue's energy threshold fails first.
So if you have almost zero function, the heart fails during development before you're even born.
Exactly. But if you have a tiny bit of residual function, the heart might survive the initial developmental push.
But the brain eventually starves over years of continuous high demand.
You nailed it. That's exactly why the symptoms look so different.
Wow. Okay, so let's look at the actual core methodology and the genetic culprit that caused all this. The research points to a gene called NDUFA5.
Right, NDUFA5.
And before this paper was published, this gene had never been conclusively linked to a human mitochondrial disease.
Right. Never. It encodes a structural subunit located out on the peripheral arm of complex 1.
But standard DNA testing didn't immediately solve the mystery for these patients.
No, it didn't. When they ran standard genome sequencing on these patients, they found biallelic variants, meaning mutations were present on both inherited copies of the NDUFA5 gene.
Right, one from each parent.
Exactly. For family one, the Korean siblings, the results were relatively straightforward. They had a frameshift variant on one allele and a missense variant on the other.
And a frameshift basically scrambles the genetic code so badly the resulting protein is usually destroyed, right?
Yes, it shifts the entire reading frame. It's devastating.
And a missense changes a crucial amino acid. So the blueprint is clearly torn in half for family one.
Very clear cut.
But the real puzzle, the massive twist in this paper, was in families two and three.
Yeah, this is where it gets wild. Family two had a start loss mutation on one allele, which basically stops the protein from being made at all.
Okay.
But on their other allele, they had what is known as a synonymous variant.
And family three?
Family three was homozygous, meaning they inherited two copies of that exact same synonymous variant.
Now hold on. A synonymous variant is basically a silent mutation.
That's what it's traditionally called, yes.
Because of how redundant our genetic code is, you can change a single DNA letter, but it still translates to the exact same amino acid.
Right, the redundancy is supposed to protect us.
If the DNA is a blueprint, a synonymous mutation is like spelling the word color with a U. Like color.
I love that analogy.
It's a typo, sure.
Yeah.
But the contractor reading the blueprint still knows exactly what color to paint the wall. The physical shape of the building doesn't change.
Exactly.
So how on earth is a quote-unquote silent typo causing a massive fatal brain disease?
Well, diagnostic algorithms are literally programmed to ignore these synonymous variants.
Really? They just skip them?
Yeah. They scan the genome, see a typo that codes for the same amino acid, and the software essentially filters it out as harmless background noise.
Wow.
In fact, standard in silico prediction tools looked at this specific variant in these patients and flagged it as totally benign.
But the researchers didn't accept that.
No, they knew something else was happening. If the master blueprint looked fine, they decided to go down to the actual cellular construction site to see how the workers were reading it.
And to do that, they used transcriptomics.
Exactly. Transcriptomics, or RNA sequencing. It allows us to observe the intermediate step of biology in real time.
Because DNA is the master blueprint locked safely in the nucleus.
Right.
And RNA is the working copy that gets sent out to the factory floor.
Yes. But before that RNA can be used to build a protein, it has to be edited. A process called splicing occurs.
Splicing.
The cellular machinery acts like a film editor. It cuts out the junk sections, the introns, and precisely glues the important parts, the exons, together.
Okay, so what did the RNA sequencing reveal about this supposedly harmless typo?
The RNA revelation was staggering. That supposedly silent DNA typo sat right at the critical boundary of exon 3, an area called the splice donor site.
The boundary line.
Right. So when the cellular editing machinery went to splice the RNA, that single misplaced letter completely derailed the process.
It couldn't read the boundary?
Exactly. The machinery couldn't recognize the boundary line, so it threw its hands up and just skipped exon 3 entirely.
Wow. It just completely bypassed a whole chapter of the instruction manual.
Entirely skipped it. And the insidious part of this specific error is that skipping exon 3 didn't scramble the rest of the downstream code.
It didn't?
No. It didn't cause a frame shift that would normally trigger the cell's internal quality control to destroy the faulty RNA.
Oh, so the cell thought it was fine.
Right. It caused an in-frame deletion. The final RNA simply produced a mutant NDUFA5 protein missing exactly 39 amino acids right in the middle.
A third of the entire protein was just gone.
Just gone.
That is a massive paradigm shift for diagnostics. It proves that our algorithms are throwing out the smoking gun because they are only looking at the master blueprint and completely ignoring how the cell is actually interpreting it.
It's a huge blind spot in standard testing.
So we know the instructions were garbled. Family one has basically no working instructions, and families two and three are building a protein missing a massive chunk.
Right.
But to prove this actually causes the disease, you have to look at the physical engine itself,
mm-hmm.
right? The key findings in the proteomics.
Yes, the proteomics. By utilizing mass spectrometry-based proteomics, the scientists could measure the absolute physical abundance of these protein complexes within the patient's cells.
And what did they find?
In the blood cells of the siblings in family one, the overall abundance of fully assembled complex one dropped to a staggering 23% and 19% compared to healthy controls.
Wow. Less than a quarter of their cellular turbines were actually built and functioning.
It's incredible they survived it all. And the NDUFA5 protein itself was completely undetectable in those siblings.
Which beautifully explains the severity of their early onset cardiac and hematological collapse during development.
Yes, it perfectly aligns.
But the researchers needed to see why the assembly was failing in the other families, the ones with the missing chunk.
To do that, they used an innovative technique called blue native page.
Blue native page. How is that different from regular protein tests?
Well, standard gel electrophoresis usually breaks protein complexes down into a cellular soup of individual parts.
Okay.
But blue native page is a highly specialized technique that separates massive protein complexes while keeping them completely intact.
Oh, that's brilliant. So instead of looking at a pile of scattered car parts, you can actually see the cars moving down the assembly line.
Exactly. Because complex one is assembled in modules, it doesn't just spontaneously pop together all at once.
Right, it's a step-by-step process.
It is a carefully orchestrated sequence of subcomplexes joining together. And the blue native page showed that without a fully functional NDUFA5 subunit, the entire assembly line stalls at the penultimate step.
So close to the finish line.
So close. The cell successfully builds several of the heavy intermediate modules, but they just pile up on the factory floor. They cannot take the final step to form the fully functional massive enzyme.
To really visualize why this pileup happens, the researchers brought in AlphaFold, multi-chimer modding, right?
AlphaFold.
Which is that incredible AI that predicts 3D protein structures based on genetic sequences.
It's been revolutionary for structural biology.
And the modeling they did on that truncated protein from family 3, the one missing 39 amino acids due to the splicing error, it showed something super interesting.
It really did. The AlphaFold model revealed that the truncated protein could actually still fold into a relatively stable independent structure.
So it didn't just turn into a disorganized, useless lump of amino acids.
No, it kept its basic shape.
But it lost very specific structural elements, these alpha helices, that it normally uses to hold hands with its neighboring proteins in the complex, specifically proteins called NDUFS2 and NDUFS3.
Right, it lost its grip.
I was thinking about this like a Lego brick.
Oh, okay.
If you look at the brick from the top, it looks perfectly fine, but the bottom tubes, the connectors, have been completely sheared off.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can physically place it onto the top of your Lego tower, but it can't lock in. The moment any biological stress is applied, the connection fails and the whole tower falls apart.
That is exactly what happens. NDUFA5 is highly codependent on those neighbors for its stability within the larger machine.
So without the connectors, it just fails.
Right. Without those crucial interaction surfaces, the subcomplex is fundamentally unstable. And that structural instability perfectly explains why the assembly line crashes right at that specific modular junction.
It's just incredible that they could map that out.
It really is.
Now, at this point in the research, they found the mutation, proved it ruins the RNA, and proved it breaks the physical protein assembly line.
Which is a lot of proof.
In a lot of fields, that would be enough.
But the scientific method demands causality.
Absolutely.
To prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that this specific genetic quirk causes this wide array of symptoms and isn't just a coincidence, the scientists had to recreate the disease from scratch.
And for that, they turned to an animal model to definitively prove causality, specifically the zebrafish.
The zebrafish.
Yeah. They utilized CRISPR-Cas9, which acts like molecular scissors, to precisely disrupt the zebrafish equivalent of the NDUFA5 gene.
Creating a genetically modified cohort.
Right, what we call MeDiFi5 CRISPins. I was reading the behavioral data on these fish, and it is stark. It paints a grim picture, but a scientifically vital one.
Very grim. By just 5 to 6 days post-fertilization, the morphological defects were glaring.
What do they look like?
Well, the mutant fish had significantly shorter bodies and a reduced distance between their eyes, pointing to severe proportional growth retardation.
Wow. And it wasn't just how they looked, it was how they behaved.
Right.
The researchers tracked their swimming patterns, alternating the environment between light and dark conditions. And the mutant fish showed massive locomotor deficits.
Massive deficits. During the dark intervals where a normal, healthy zebra fish would be actively swimming around, these mutant fish barely move.
The maximum velocity was incredibly low.
Yeah, and this severe motor impairment in the zebrafish directly mirrors the progressive muscular hypotonia, ataxia, and complete loss of motor skills documented in the human patients from families 2 and 3.
So the biology is that similar?
The biological pathways are so highly conserved across species that the zebrafish recreated the exact human physiological collapse.
That's amazing.
But the model revealed something even more profound about the neurological impact.
The electrophysiological recordings, they actually hooked these tiny fish up and measured their brain activity.
Yes, and the results were undeniable. The control fish showed normal baseline neural activity.
And the crispins?
The mutant Indufa 5 crispins exhibited spontaneous epileptiform activity.
Meaning they were having seizures.
They were experiencing active, measurable seizures. And this maps directly back to the clinical reality of the patients.
Like the infant in family 3 who experienced a documented febrile seizure.
Exactly. And the older patients who had those devastating brain lesions.
The survival data on the fish really closed the book on this. None of the mutant fish survived past 15 days.
None of them.
More than half died by day 6. The failure of this single cellular gear was fundamentally incompatible with life.
It confirmed unequivocally that the NDUFA5 gene is absolutely critical for early embryonic development and continuous neurological function.
The loss of this specific protein directly causes the multisystem collapse observed in the human cohort.
It really is the smoking gun.
So, synthesizing this incredible journey, we started with a medical mystery spanning the globe. 4 patients, 3 families, and a devastating set of symptoms that didn't neatly fit together.
And standard DNA tests completely missed the culprit.
But through absolute triumph of multi-omic science layering DNA sequencing, RNA transcriptomics, mass spectrometry proteomics, AI protein modeling, and CRISPR animal modeling, this team officially added NDUFA5 to the medical books as a definitive cause of complex 1 mitochondrial disease.
As I said at the beginning, this paper is a true masterclass in modern diagnostics.
It really is.
It beautifully illustrates the immense complexity of mitochondrial diseases and how a single broken gear can disguise itself across wildly different organ systems, from the heart and blood to the brain and muscles, depending entirely on residual energy levels.
Which brings us to the discussion and implications for you, the listener. What does this paradigm shift actually mean for the future of medicine?
For clinical practice, and especially for anyone out there caught in the nightmare of an elusive, undiagnosed condition, it means the diagnostic playbook has fundamentally changed.
You have to look deeper.
Yes. We can no longer just sequence a genome, look at the master blueprint, and assume we have the whole story.
Because the blueprint might look fine, but the execution is flawed.
Exactly. If standard DNA tests fail to find the culprit, the medical community has to explore RNA splicing and directly measure protein abundance. Those might hold the key to an answer that DNA alone simply cannot provide.
So the absence of a glaring error in a basic DNA test is no longer evidence of a healthy cell.
Not at all. It's about looking at the actual construction site, not just trusting the blueprint.
Which leaves us with a fascinating and slightly terrifying take-home message to ponder. If a supposedly silent synonymous mutation, a minor typo that standard diagnostic software is literally programmed to ignore, can completely wreck a vital cellular engine by derailing RNA splicing, well, how many other unsolved medical mysteries are currently hiding in plain sight, disguised as harmless genetic background noise?
It really makes you wonder how much we are still missing.
It does. What does this mean for the future of all those unsolved cases out there? We might finally be zooming in close enough to see the real picture. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science. Base by base.
In the quiet hum behind my skin, a tired spark can't pull me. Pages of code and midnight light chasing why the current won't run. fragile chain, cut the message down to almost nothing again. A skipped out line of silence where it should speak. In the engine learns what it can't keep. Stuck at the Q line, halfway built.
Questions pass, name the break and you can start to mend. Just all beginning isn't the end.